Oh, this is Nerd's Paradise. Duncan MacLeod is... He's nerdy. He doesn't mind. Do you mind? I don't think so. He's Duncan MacLeod on Twitter this evening saying, apparently, in addition to the don't panic on the Tesla Roadster's screen, there was also a towel on board Falcon Heavy. Douglas Adams would have been delighted. Colin Cullis, I mean, what is the reference to Douglas Adams? You would have read Douglas Adams backwards, I suspect.
Yeah, it was actually a suggestion that somebody tweeted to Elon Musk when he said he's sending his car.
Earth to Colin.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ground control to Major Colin. There he
am
is.
Am I there? There we go. Yeah. Bruce, it was
It's easier to make contact with the Falcon 9 or whatever it is than it is to make contact with you.
Strictly speaking, I'm further away from the car than potentially it would have been when it was first in space. It was only 140 kilometers up when we were all going, gosh, that's amazing. And here I am sitting a couple of thousand k's away from you. It was a tweet. The fact is, when he first tweeted that he's sending his car up to space, somebody suggested he should put the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in the cubbyhole with a towel, which he then said, great, I will. And that was it. And the don't panic was, of course, a reference to that stuck up on the screen. It was amazing to watch. I sat up till about 10:45 it was here in South Africa, 2.5 million people I noticed were watching along with me on SpaceX YouTube to see it all go. And the point at which 10 seconds before launch it says it was then handed over to the rockets now. The humans were just commentating and hoping for the best and watching it take off and watching those two separate boosters separate, fall back to Earth and then land almost in unison back on their
pads. That is the most, I mean, yes, it's impressive to have a motor car going towards Mars. That's impressive. But to have those two boosters come back in almost perfect synchronicity and land back on Earth. I mean, they were struggling a year ago to land one at once, and now they're doing two at the same time.
And I don't think people appreciate just how big those things are. Those are 70 meter tall, 4 meter wide towers falling back to Earth at faster than the speed of sound, then slowing themselves down and landing on a spot no bigger, you know, than a helicopter pad without any humans controlling them. It is incredible stuff. I take my hat off to him.
It's business unusual, is it not?
It is. But I have different business of unusual natures this week.
I know you do. It's fabulous. Tell me about records on markets and the Dow and all of these delicious things.
Yeah, so besides the celebrations yesterday, it was the shock on Monday of the Dow Jones sort of losing 1,600 points in a drop. It finished a little bit better than that, but 1,600 points, a record drop. And after the shock, I became curious to say, how did we know that there was such a big loss of the world's markets, trillions of dollars worth of value removed? And the answer to that is a fantastic story. And it's a story of two cities who both, at one point, share the same name. It begins in Amsterdam in the 1600s, where a company we probably would recognize is formed, the first public company. And as a consequence, an exchange was created that allowed you to buy into this public company. It may ring a bell, the Dutch East India Company.
Yep.
300 years later, the notion of stock exchanges and publicly traded companies spread all around the world. And in one particular one, New Amsterdam, now known as New York, two men, a journalist and a statistician, were concerned that it was very hard to work out what the value of the multitude of shares were that were being traded, in this case, on the New York Stock Exchange. So they created what was an averaged index using the top 30 shares for an index that still bears their name, the Dow Jones Industrial Average Industrial Index, was first put together in 1880 with a value of 62. Now, on the 26th of January this year, it hit its record high of 26,616 before falling that 1,600 points on the February the 5th. But I was kind of curious how that index became so useful to us. And the extension of it and the way it has grown all around the world. I couldn't even count the number of indexes that are currently listed around the world because there are hundreds of these things. But for that, we have to thank the invention of one John C. Bogle. And he came up with the notion of an index fund. It gave an investor the opportunity to invest in the indexed rather than having to buy a share or a mutual fund operated by somebody who reckoned they knew lots of stuff.
Can I just name drop here very briefly?
Absolutely.
When I was at Warren Buffett's annual general meeting last year, one of the invited guests sitting in the luxury seats where you can actually have leg room and see the faces of Warren Buffett and of Charlie Munger was Jack Bogle. And nearly 90 years old is Jack Bogle. And he was asked to stand. And the audience just loved Jack Bogle. And Warren Buffett's remark at that invited at that gathering was Jack Bogle, is the guy for who has saved American investors billions of dollars in fees. I mean, this is a guy who is revered in the United States, where index tracking is massively popular, far more popular than it is here, and index tracking being blamed, or partially blamed at least, for this week's meltdown. But sorry, you carry on.
Well, it's good that you raise Warren Buffett, because the story of John, Jack as he's known, Bogle, has Warren Buffett as a very central character in it. So Buffett, sort of just a quick little background for him. 11 years old, he begins investing. He has excellent investment skills by anybody. He's got over $70 billion worth of value. He's 87 years old. Although he only made his first billion, in his 56th year. He was 56 years old before he made his first billion. So that's how much has come since then. But in 2013, it is a letter to investors at Berkshire Hathaway, pretty much similar to the event that you attended. He included this in that letter. "My money, I should add, is where my mouth is. What I advise here is essentially identical to certain instructions I have laid out in my will. One bequest provides that cash will be delivered to a trustee for my wife's benefit. My advice to the trustee could not be more simple. Put 10% of the cash in short-term government bonds and 90% in a very low-cost S&P 500 index fund. I suggest Vanguard's. I believe the trust's long-term results from this policy will be superior to those attained by most investors, whether pension funds, institutions, or individuals who employ high-fee managers." Now, his reference there for using Vanguard's: Vanguard is the index fund created, invented for the first time on the 31st of August 1976 by John Bogle. But it took a couple of other events before he had his light bulb moment. The first was his undergraduate studies in 1950, where he just did a comparison between how well the stock market had done, the index, versus how well the funds that had people's invested in it had done. And he realized that most of them didn't do as well as the index did, which got him thinking. He didn't do anything at that point. But a little later on, he read an article by Paul Samuelson. This is sort of the most preeminent economist of our time, who wrote a piece that said his theory about the efficient market hypothesis was that basically markets kind of knew what was going on, and so that a share price would typically be fairly valued for what it was worth. Not everybody agrees with it, and that's kind of par for the course when it comes to economics. But it kind of holds that if people did know something that nobody else knew, it was either unlikely or illegal. So that most share prices would be about right, in which case clever, highly paid fund managers probably wouldn't be able to move faster than the market moves anyway. And so his suggestion was that the American investor needed the ability to invest in the index, not to have to rely on people taking lucky guesses on all these other particular funds. And Bogle at the time had recently, or was busy working on a merger. The merger had gone relatively well in the beginning and then went terribly badly. He got sort of blamed for it, got moved to the side. He wasn't very happy with it, but it did leave him in a position where he wasn't allowed to manage any actively traded funds. So he founded Vanguard. The plan was to try and get $150 million worth of initial capital, which would be simply invested into the S&P 500. He would create the index fund. No, very low fees. The marketing, though, probably needed a bit of work. He said, "I will not bet that I will do better than the index, but I won't do worse. And I won't charge you a lot of money." Over time, that sort of started improving. You only got one-tenth of that $150 million, by the way. But over time, people really liked the message that it wouldn't do worse and it would be very cheap. And as it stands now, that fund, largest in the world, has over $4 trillion worth of assets that it manages, simply putting them into that S&P 500 index. And you're right, in the US, these are massive funds. One report that I was looking at, and some of the numbers are a little older, so can't say definitively, but it appears 40% of US investments are now via index funds. And there are a lot of them. And so it's still not just a case of pick anyone. You do want to find a well-selected one. And this is kind of the story of how it came about and what was required for it. And in 2005, supposedly, Samuelson had said that he believed the invention of the index fund was as a significant invention for humanity as the wheel and the alphabet. Now, we typically don't think about all of those things, but when you do see stock markets rise, fall, go sideways, and people certainly get very upset, the one small consolation is that over time, these things do better. From 62 to 26,000 suggests it's on a good kind of trajectory. And as long as you're invested in most of it, and as long as you're not having your investments taken away by relatively large fees, then sticking your money in one of these things seems like as good an advice as you're about to get. And that's from one of the world's best economists and probably the world's best investor.
And who needs Warren Ingram when we've got Colin Cullis, business unusual correspondent this evening. Colin Cullis on The Money Show. Thank you, Colin, very much for that introduction into index funds.